Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Fred Schenkelberg to the podcast. Welcome, Fred.
Hey, James. Glad to be back again. Always a pleasure.
Well, it's good to have you. And I know the last couple podcasts we had, we talked about, you know, one of those terms that a lot of people don't like, and, you know, it's called statistics. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about them today, but not specifically the actual analysis techniques, but the importance of understanding statistics, the fundamentals of statistics, and maybe some other mathematical disciplines that help us truly understand the data and make sense of it, like calculus and some others. And I figured you being a statistician, who would be better to talk to us about the importance of understanding the fundamentals of it than a statistician?
I'm a little biased, you know, and not from a statistical point of view, but the, there's two ways I wanted to address this as you're introducing this topic, but let me start with this afternoon. I spend a little bit of time, I'm reading a book on gardening, actually. And it's more of an advanced thing, and it's about soil chemistry and pH and balances and getting the right mix of minerals and trace elements and so on. And they were describing an exceedingly complex and highly variable process with how our soil and all of the microbes and mechanisms and chemicals and nutrients and how plants interact with those things to create the food that we grow, that we eat. And in order to understand that process, I firmly believe, and I've heard this from others also, is that having a grounding in basic mathematical logic and reasoning from addition through calculus, for example, can help you understand a more complex system more clearly. Right? It gives you the patterns of thinking, the logic of how things accumulate or are assembled and interact. When somebody says that if I add lime to this mix, it's going to raise the pH balance. Well, I know it's not a one-to-one fix. I know if I put in 3 pounds of lime in this area of material that the pH isn't going to go automatically up by 1 point. It's a part of a process, and I'm influencing it slightly. Right now, the biological world of our soils is amazingly complex. Now, in the equipment we deal with and the systems we deal with are complex also. A common question for people that don't understand that is, well, how many ways does your forklift fail? Right? I mean, it runs out of electricity, the battery goes dead, the battery fails, the battery connector gets loose, the battery connector corrodes. You know? And that's just the battery connector. Right? On and on and on and on and on. There's thousands of ways that can fail. Now, all of those things are competing to cause it to fail. That's another complex, amazingly complex system. The ability to think about how causation happens, how relationships like regression analysis, how if A, B, and C happen, that's going to impact the outcome at point C or point at the output. Some we describe with mathematical formulas to create a shorthand for that. Others we use a XY plot and we plot a regression line that says if we add 2 pounds of lime, I get this much increase in pH, for example. Other time we have to understand, and this is where statistics come in, is what's the variability? How does that the addition of this material, this lime in my garden, depends on soil moisture, the moisture content, the existing chemicals and systems that are there, the temperature, and on and on and on. And the quality and the graininess of the material I'm adding changes it. So all of these things have variation. And in our factories, our raw materials have variation, wall thicknesses have variation, lubrication has variation. You name it, in your plant, you will not find two of them that are identical. If you look close enough, they will be different. And so the combination of mathematical thinking, which is describing in a coherent way relationships between items that are adding stress to a system and resulting in the output that we're seeing, is one way we describe things with a formula. When they're immutable, right, they become laws. We have all these, voltage law, for example, it is what it is. And there's a strict formula for it. But a chemical process or the throughput on a line, there's too many things varying there. So we might have if we turn the belt speed up, we should get 100 cases an hour, but we might not, right? There might be more downtime. There are other factors at play.
Exactly.
So that's where the variability part comes into it.
Yeah, and that's where having an understanding of mathematical concepts is so important in this. That very example you used, let's turn up the speed. You know, I actually ended up having to do a time study, a speed study on this particular piece of equipment. And mm-hmm. What we found is the bottleneck was a filler. And if we had that filler turned up to, say, 160 bottles per minute, the end result at the end of the line was about 150 bottles per minute. But if I slowed that down to 155, we actually mm-hmm. got 155 out at the end of the line because of how all the buffering between the different equipment stations on that line interacted, the ramp up, ramp down on the conveyors, all those things. So by slowing down that part, we actually sped up production on the line. And there's a ton of variables there. And
that's right.
You know, I did a lot of that by trial and error. There's probably better ways to do that, but we invested a lot of time in capturing the data, evaluating it, doing all those things. And that's where a lot of these mathematical foundations come in, is allow you to design those experiments or analyze those experiments or analyze failure data to make sense of it.
That's right. And it's very much, it's a give and take, right? Now, you've run into engineers and technicians that just can listen to a line and go, oh, we need to go to 156 bottles per minute, we'll do better, and it actually outputs in 156 bottles a minute. But they can't explain why that's the right number. Where a little bit of understanding the running that experiment you did and understanding the variables that make the most difference, then we can take the steps to control or monitor and adjust based on those dominant factors that affect the output of what we're trying to do. We can incrementally ratchet up our improvements by paying careful attention and modeling and understanding it. So the model gives us a framework. We do experiments, make observations, we adjust and adapt the model, and vice versa. It helps us ask better questions, and it goes back and forth. That's how I think we need to use our mathematical thinking. Statistics adds a layer of a understanding of the role of variability. Just because it worked today may not mean it's going to work next week when the humidity is much higher. Let's understand the variation of those important things on the overall production that we get.
Yes, absolutely. Now, with that, you mentioned statistics. What are some of the fundamental mathematical disciplines we should know as maintenance or reliability or asset managers? What are those things? So we talked about statistics, which is obviously a big one. But where does that come in the progression? Is that the first thing we should learn about, or is that the second? And what are those other things we should have an understanding of?
I would say for our technicians or senior maintenance and our engineers, it's up through calculus. You may not use calculus every day, but many of the concepts of their equipment and the interactions, I mean, even things like PID controllers, are essentially little calculus engines. And so understanding how they work and how they interact with other parts of our system is founded on an understanding of calculus. And so if you don't know what calculus is, I highly recommend either getting a book or taking an online course or getting the basics of what differentiation is and area under the curve means, things like that, and the rate of change of something. Because, you know, in that line experiment you were doing on that filler, you may have noticed that if I ramp the filler up very, very fast, I have more problems. If I ramp it up really, really slow, I have more problems. There might be an optimum rate of change in the and across that machine that allows it to come up to speed without problems. And it's that rate of change that calculus is all about in many cases. But I would start really at the foundational level, which is, where does the data come from? How do we measure it? How do we get consistent and accurate measures and minimize measurement error, and then data tracking and logging and recording of information? If we can do math all day long on some random numbers and think we've got conclusions, but if the data was really bad to start with, then our work is for naught at that point. So understanding the data, how it's collected, how it's measured, the different ways of measuring things, what measurement areas, measurement system analysis, those would be the starting point, is understand those pieces of it.
All right. So for that starting point of understanding measurement systems, logging, those sorts of things, where does someone go to learn that? Do they take a course on that? Is that a book that they pick up, or is that part of another course like statistics that they can learn that from?
I'm trying to think of where I learned it. It's been in a couple of seminars and in classes that the companies I worked in had people brought in to do it. There are a couple of books out there. If you look for measurement system analysis, MSA, the NIST Engineering Handbook, Statistics Engineering Handbook has a section on MSA. That would give you a starting point for it. And I think they often list other references that may be very useful.
Excellent. I know we talked about that one in a previous podcast. So that book hits two different things that we're trying to look at, the measurement systems and then also using that information for viable growth analysis, so on and so forth.
That's right. So then after you get some data, there's a whole field, and it's not quite statistics, it's not quite mathematics, it's, I think, a mixture of the two. It's called exploratory data analysis. Essentially, it means plot the data. Plot it a couple different ways, and then look for patterns or anomalies or issues, an inflection point in a curve. Why did that change? Let's start asking better questions of what's going on within our data. So exploratory data analysis, there's a book, and I want to say it's by John Tukey, that kind of goes into the basics of doing box plots and histograms and dot charts and a bunch of other very fundamental, easy to construct graphics that let you explore your data. More advanced tools let you do it with multiple dimensions, where you can make a 3D or higher dimension object and rotate it and look at different views of it and look for patterns and anomalies and stuff. But that's way advanced. The exploratory data analysis means just plot your data, plot it a number of different ways. There are good books on it. Most software packages have a suite of ways to plot the data. Then after that, it's a toss-up if you're more in the design side and more in the high-end engineering and trying to optimize a line, then calculus would be next. If you're more on trying to understand the time to failure and doing predictive maintenance or prognostic health management, or you're doing scheduling and trying to get the most life out of a system but minimize the amount of downtime, then regression analysis and calculus are both really good tools to have available. And then it overlaps into statistics. If you're looking at doing experiments and making comparisons, if you're looking at trying to optimize something or create something that's running stably, say a maintenance program in your line, you want to create a very capable system, which is a statistics term, meaning that it works well within the specifications it's supposed to work in. It has ability to vary as it wants to, but that stays within the boundaries of what creates a good product, for example. So process capability in statistical process control are based on statistics and statistical understanding. So it'd be in that area. And in both cases, there's online courses. There's all kinds of different sources. And I know for the calculus ones, I'm drawing a complete blank. There's an online education program that's free.
EDX?
Not EDX. I know they have statistics one. It was a guy started it to do tutorials for his grandkid or niece or somebody, and it ended up being an entire business for him. He does hundreds and hundreds of these tutorials and all kinds of topics now. But he started with math, and it went up through calculus. I'm drawing a complete blank. It's not one of the Coursera, EDX, Udemy. It's not one of those guys. It was...
Khan Academy.
Yeah, K-A-H-N, right? Khan. Yeah, that's it. For basic math in up through basic and dealing with numbers and doing trigonometry and calculus and stuff like that, Khan Academy is amazing. Statistics, I think they do the basic stuff, but for college level stuff, Berkeley X, Harvard X, I think MIT X, they all have courses. Stanford X are these online free, massive open online courses. And they all have, you just search for MOOC, MOOC, in statistics, and you'll find dozens of options there. And they're starting all the time. So those would be good. But by far the best way is get your pile of data, start plotting it with Excel and with whatever by hand, whatever package you got. And then I need to compare these two performance of these two lines, for example. Well, what's the right tool to do that? And a couple different resources, or ask a few questions, you may find that a hypothesis test is the right way to do it. Well, let me go figure out a hypothesis test. Then you realize that there's 25 different ways to do hypothesis testing. Well, which one's the right one for this circumstance? And work your way through it. But have a question in mind, have a problem you're trying to solve, and step by step, start whittling away at it. And yeah, you'll run into some dead ends and things that don't look quite right. If you have somebody in your plant that's well-versed with these tools and statistics, but they don't have time to teach you formally or to do a class or do the work for you, is ask them better questions. I know that this should be a hypothesis test. Is this the right one for what I'm trying to do? Might be an appropriate question. They can answer it very quickly. And you're off to the next step, to the next question you're going to run into. And that's how I learned it. It was just trial and error and asking questions and learning as I went and continuously asking more and more questions to cement, how do I solve this problem? And by doing it live with real numbers and trying to solve real problems, it was so much more meaningful and so much more informative to how I used it. And of course, I went to school. I got a master's degree in statistics and so on. My factory, the folks on the swing shift really just shook their head when I come back in from class and go, all right, what experiment are we going to do today? Because I'd had some new technique I had to try out and play with. But it gave me a real life hands-on, this is when this works, and this is when things to be cautious of or be careful of. It was that real experience that really made the learning work. And getting feedback helps, right? Whether it's a book or a mentor or a teacher, that would all help. And so, well, all of these things. The best way is to be inquisitive. The information's out there, and then try it. Don't be afraid of it.
Yeah,
try it.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com. And I think you brought up a good point. Trying to learn all these topics at once or even in sequence can be difficult. So take a data set that you have access to, that you can use, ask to find what the problem is you're trying to solve, and then work at it that way. You'll learn the new techniques, you'll learn the different variants and what you're trying to do to solve that problem. It makes it more real for you. Whereas if you just follow through a textbook at times, I find you may do it, but when you actually have to go apply it, you didn't understand it properly, you didn't understand, ask the right questions, and a lot of it becomes lost because you may not use certain aspects of what you learned in that class or textbook quite a long period of time. So I really like your approach of define your problem, get your data, and then start working through it from that aspect. Yeah, you may ask some questions involving calculus, you may do some different plots, you may get into statistics all in that same problem, but at least you're understanding the concepts and applying it to data that you actually have and is relevant to you.
That's right. That's right. And it just makes it a whole lot more useful right from the start. Right. It sticks with you longer. And I do it all the time. I'm always off into the books and often online to look up a technique or a method or a process or stuff. And because there's all these unique ways to solve problems that are very efficient or very powerful or very useful. And I don't need to invent them all. There's thousands of ways to make comparisons, for example, in statistics. It's being aware of what's available and working through getting the right tool out of the toolbox is probably the right analogy.
Yes, absolutely. Now, we talked about, measurement system analysis, exploratory data analysis, calculus, statistics. Talked about a lot of things. What is the one thing you want our listeners to do with what we talked about today?
Never trust your calculator. Seriously, if you, I think I've told you this story before, James, is that I took a Relax, ReliaSoft had a Weibull Plus or has a Weibull Plus Plus package. And one of the first iterations of it came up with this little wizard that you put your data in, you push a button, and it would fit like a dozen different distributions to it. It had a Gumbel distribution and a gamma distribution and a normal and a Weibull and exponential and so on. And it would say, bing, bang, boom, the normal distribution is the best distribution for your data. That's what you should use. And if you don't like that one, number two is this distribution, and number three is this one. And it ranked ordered them all. Said these are the, and it was no plots. There's some cryptic numbers at the end of it. And my professor, I showed him that, and he looked at it, and he sat back for a second. He goes, "That's just plain evil." And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "You can get whatever answer you want. So if you have a preconceived notion of that the answer should be, set our line speed to 155, you'll find the distribution that gives you that answer, and then you'll say that's the right answer. That's the right distribution." As opposed to plot the data, do regression analysis. Which one actually fits this thing? Is there an underlying phenomena that's occurring that would preclude, this distribution would be best suited to fit that behavior? Is there a connection between how that distribution or that analysis was created and why it was created and where it's optimized for to help you solve that particular problem? It's not go out and do 1,000 different calculations and pick the one you like. It's explore 1,000 different calculations and pick the one that works, that gives you a true answer. Not the one you like, but the true answer. And I think that's fundamental to all of the stuff we do, is there's lots of ways to get a number at the end of the day. But if you can't explain it in a rational, coherent way why this analysis is gives us a true reflection of what's going on, you really wasted a lot of your time and other people's time in the process.
Yes, absolutely. And if you understand the fundamentals like we talked about, then you can check and make sure that you are getting, in fact, the right answer, and you're not just accepting whatever that calculator spits out at you, like we've talked about in the past numerous times.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the worst. It's 2.2. What are the units? Well, they're angstroms. All right. Well, we're talking about the length of a table here, so I don't think my cable's 2.2 angstroms. You might want to check your calculations. You know, but it gets silly like that sometimes when you just believe what comes out of the calculator.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Fred, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us about the mathematical disciplines required to understand problems, analyze the data we have, and how to get started in that. And we'll include links to all the different things we talked about today, the different courses, the different books, those sorts of resources. But before we go, where can people find out more about you? What activities are you up to? Do you have any resources on these topics that you want to reference?
Yeah, I do. It's more on the reliability statistics section and topics in that realm. There's a few others on just regular statistics also on Ascendo Reliability. If you go underneath articles, there's a series of articles called CRE Prep. And so the CRE body of knowledge goes into depth on reliability statistics and on quality statistics also, and everything from hypothesis test up to regression analysis, design of experiments over to Weibull analysis, and pretty much everything in between. And so over the last 5 or 6 years, I've been writing articles or short tutorials on various topics and various subsets of that body of knowledge. And so I think I'm up to like 300 articles or something like that there. So if you search for a topic, say a Friedman test, for example, which is a non-parametric comparison test, there's an article on how to use that test. I remember that one because I wrote it a few weeks ago. But there's stuff on design of experiments. There's stuff on hypothesis tests. There's stuff on all kinds of these things. And they're short tutorials. Oftentimes, they have an example. And they're Minitab or Weibull or whatever agnostic. They're meant to be done by hand in most cases. Calculators and other software tools will help. But you need the understanding. So those tutorials are aimed at helping you understand these concepts and tools and techniques. So it's ascendoreliability.com underneath articles, and it's CRE preparation is the series of articles. There's a handful of that, or there's hundreds of other articles on all kinds of topics, from risk to safety to big data analytics to engineering leadership and all kinds of other things. I'm drawing a complete blank, James. I'm sorry. What your series of articles is on?
Yes, it's on Ascendo Reliability, and it's also on hpreliability.com. But I think it's under maintenance and reliability or something like that.
Reliability and maintenance, or maintenance and reliability? Yeah, you had one of those catchy titles. That's
yeah, throw it in there.
Yeah, no, but you often talk about the various concepts of how all this stuff fits together and what issues, and a lot of times it's about culture, it seems like, which is a big factor in doing a lot of what we're doing. But it's all out there, so that's where a lot of work is, and a lot of this fundamental information really is.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, culture is huge, but even if you have the best culture and people don't understand the mathematics behind the decision-making, the data, we're not going to get where we need to go. We need to have both, right? We need to have the culture, the systems, the analytical skills, and those sorts of things. So we do try to cover all those different topics.
That's right. And it's a growing body. We're adding articles and webinars and podcasts every week. So it's an ongoing process. And I think we're up over 2,400 subscribers to the site. And subscribers basically get a weekly email with what's new on the site. That's the big perk of it. And there's some areas like resources and the recorded webinars and such that are behind the subscriber wall. It's free, but it allows us to touch base with you on a regular basis. And that's been a growing body for quite some time. Now, I'm going to be curious. The other thing we got going on, I know that you're going to be at SMRP's annual conference coming up this fall. This will be my first time there. So I'm going to be curious how much content is there and how diverse it is, from leadership topics to hands-on nuts and bolts, practical experience type stuff, case studies to theoretical work, and then how much mathematical rigor is through the whole process. And so it'd be interesting to see how the conference pans out and all that. So I'm looking forward to going.
Yeah, it is. I believe there's 8 separate tracks this year. So lots of content, varying levels from beginner to advanced. And I believe there will be topics on some of these advanced mathematical techniques we've talked about. But the purpose behind this topic was not to scare people off of that. It was to slowly break them in. How do you learn about some of these things? How do you become more fluent with them? Even if it's just starting to understand some of the terminology, mm-hmm. reliable hypothesis testing, comparison testing, those sorts of things. Is important. Understanding what those mean, even at a fundamental level, will make the data analysis and everything else so much more valid and allow you to start asking different questions and some of the right questions.
That's right. Well, I'd say better questions. That's the key, is a bit of math skills, a few plots, a little bit of playing around with data. You start to understand that it's telling you a story, and you just need to listen to it. And it allows you to understand it better, whatever it is you're dealing with, and to ask better questions. So next time you dive into getting information, you know what to look for, where you're going. So it's all good.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Fred, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about this topic. I'll be sure to link to all this stuff in the show notes, including the CRE prep articles and all those different things. So I truly appreciate the time you spent today to talk about this topic with us.
All right. No problem, James. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
All right. Thanks, James.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.